Blog Talk Radio.
I'm saying what I'm trying to get to is that strange teacher equipped all Elijah Muhammad to be the leader. But at the same time, didn't tell him but little. So he left him also with curiosity, with burden on his mind, to understand the strange package that he was given called Supreme Wisdom. And he told Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said, "Brother, you have to study it deep." I'm giving you the words of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. These are his words. "Brother," he said, Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, that Farad told him, "Brother, you have to study it deep. It's not on the surface." He said, "Dig deep." And that's what Honorable Elijah Muhammad would tell his ministers. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad obviously was given some hints from Farad that we didn't get. And obviously, he had a bit of advantage over us when it came to understanding those doctrinal teachings, or esoteric teachings of the Nation of Islam called Supreme Wisdom. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he would sometimes listen to his ministers wrestling with some of the unknowns in the wisdom. And sometimes he would smile. Sometimes I've heard him say, "Brother, I think you own something." But most of the time he said, "No, you have to dig deeper." Most of the time that's what he would say. "No, you don't have it. You have to dig deeper." That's what he would tell him. So I said I was going to make a long story short. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in the last about 3 or 4 years of his life, he showed a big change. I know him. He's my father. He was my father. He is my father. He still is. Dead alive, he's my father. He showed a big change in his spirit. He didn't have the same exciting spirit, enthusiastic spirit. He was kind of a low spirit person, especially when he was talking about the progress of the Nation of Islam, the followers of the Nation of Islam. He was a bit low spirited. And I saw also in him an intent to get me to not go back, but keep going forward. I made trouble for him, but not intentionally, not with a desire to make trouble for him. I made trouble for him because I couldn't think that way anymore. I was disagreeing with the idea of God that I was given as a child. And to disagree with the idea of God that I was given as a child, I had to also disagree with the idea of devil that I was given as a child. Now, I don't think I was falling in love with the white race. I wasn't. And I'm still not in love with the white race. I'm in love with the human race. I want you to understand what was happening to me. My mind just couldn't accept those things that I was given anymore. And I began as a minister of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was the minister of Temple Number 12. I began then to speak my tone was quite different from the tone of the rest of the ministers. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was told by the national staff that I should be stopped, that they thought I was going to make trouble. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to stop me. He let me continue. It was only when I was reported, this was after I had served a prison term and returned to the Temple of Islam and to the nation. It was only after I was reported for saying that Farad was not God that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a kind of hearing. See, he was a judge. But believe me, the temples had their courts, and they might still have their courts. So he had a hearing. He found me guilty, and he put me out. And I stayed out for a while. But he asked about me, and I would never stop. The law was that you're not supposed to have any contact with anybody in the Temple of Islam when you're put out. When it came to him and my father and my mother, I didn't respect that. Whether they asked me or not, I would write them. I even tried to call a few times. One time, secretary felt so sorry for me, she called and told me your son is on the phone. He refused to speak to me, but I called. And I was using some psychology too. I love my father. I love my father and my mother. It's a pain to be separated from your father and mother and that you really love. And really, we had no problem. Some fathers and mothers have problems. Some parents and children have big problems. But really, really, we didn't have any problems. We liked each other's company. My father liked my company. I liked my father's company. We liked each other's company, you know. So we didn't have any personal problem. It was this impersonal thing that had come between us. So I was moved as a son to stay in touch with my father. But believe me, I knew my father was a hard man when it comes to defending his nation of Islam. And what I mean by defending it, he didn't want anything to creep into the thoughts of the members of the nation of Islam that would weaken their faith. And if we, at that time, the strongest faith we had was faith in the idea of God that we was given in the nation of Islam. And he didn't want anything shaking that. He didn't want anything messing with that. And I can't blame him. I didn't hold that against him. But anyway, I did use some psychology, but I said to myself, I'm going to make sure he doesn't forget me. And I'll make sure he always will always know that this is not personal. So when he would have his Savior's Day, I would also send him a special message. And my message was that your third Savior's Day is nearing. I wish you success on your big day. That's what I would tell him. And that softened his heart in time. So the second time I was put out, my brother told me, say, yeah, I put out second time. My brother said, Wallace, said, why don't you try to come back? I said, I think Daddy wants you to come back. He said, the way he was speaking about you at the table, I think he wants you to come back. So I said, okay. So again, I made a request, and he gave me permission to come over and see him. So I came over and saw him, and he sat down at the table. It was a table almost like a courtroom table. That wooden table, rectangular table. He sat down, and I'm not going to tell you everything that happened in this situation. But anyway, yeah. It was serious, but in a way it was a little humorous. He sat down. He said, well, son, he said, you know what you have to do? I said, yes, sir. You have to go before the people. He would ask me, and then I told him, yes. He said, you have to go before the people, and you have to admit that you were wrong. I said, yes, sir. I went before the people, and I told them I was wrong. I said I was wrong to disagree with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And really, in my own mind, I was sad. I didn't really disagree with him. I was disagreeing with his teaching. See, that's how I covered for myself in my own conscience. So I put it that way so my soul could take it. I said I was wrong to disagree with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In fact, I told my father, I said, Daddy, I have no problem with you. My problem is with Mr. Faraz, not with you. I said, I think you have done a good job. And really, he had. And well, let me tell you something else that I have come to strongly believe, and I would say I know it. Mr. Faraz himself was not believing in what he taught. But he was using what he taught the condition of our people from one of blindness and blind obedience to the white world to one of dissatisfaction and rebellion, that he hoped would eventually lead us to even question him. And believe me, there was an African-American who actually was back there in the early 30s who challenged God. And obviously he had a little more education than the great majority of the followers back then. Again, it was my father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who told us this story, and it was at the dinner table. He usually told us these things at the dinner table because he was busy. It wasn't dinner time. He wasn't socializing. He was working. Or wasn't having conversation, just for conversation's sake. He was working with his papers, with his correspondence, with the business of the community, the Nation of Islam, as it was called, whatever. So anyway, it was at the dinner table again, and Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, oh yes, he said, he called Farad our Savior. Yes, he said, oh, our Savior. See, he wasn't always talking wisdom and being serious. See, he could relax with us. See, he would have jokes sometime and have fun in conversation. See, sometimes something would be said and it would tickle him so, say, his face would turn red. His face would flush, he would be red in his face. He said, one time, I saw him get very, very, very much concerned. Said one of our black brothers challenged him while he was teaching. So he was teaching about the black man being God. Said a black man stood up right while he was talking and said, well, if the black man is God, why don't you just leave here and turn it over to me? Now, if someone way back there in the early 30s, back there at the beginning almost, when Farad was here himself, and he was only among us, we are told, I was a baby back then, for only 3 years. If an African-American, a black man with black skin stood up and challenged him, saw a problem with someone being his color, being our leader, then you know many of us must have had the same problem and didn't say anything. And I was one of them. The more I looked at his face, the more I saw him looking more white than black, the more curious I became. So how come we can still worship him and pray to him if God is black? But you know, so many things burden our minds. We was told that the mother that gave birth to Farad was a white woman. A white woman. But a warm white woman who had never mixed with the wicked white world. We told that she was always kept in a Muslim society over in the Far East, in Mecca. Actually, it's the Middle East. I guess it was far for us. We were taught that really Arabia was in the Far East. It's not in the Far East, it's in the Middle East. But that's what we were taught, you know. So we were told that his mother was a white woman and his father was a black man named Alfonso. He even told us his name, Alfonso. See, if you would go to any John Muhammad in Detroit or Silas, Prophet Silas, wherever he is, maybe even to Farrakhan, some of his ministers, some of Minister Farrakhan's ministers, maybe you'll hear them tell you some of these things, you know. Oh yes, his father was named Alfonso. And his mother was named Baby G. Yeah. And they tried to get Farad the first time, and they missed. They got a girl. And when they saw it was a girl, they said, oops, we missed that time. Now, this is all in the teachings, right? That's all in the teachings. Why I've shared that with you? To show you that there was hints to the wise. Don't take this too serious. See, that kind of language says, don't take it too serious. Yes. And there's so many other hints. I wish I had time to tell you a lot of these things. But let's get back to Islam on race and genetics. the best help that I find for my own mind, and I believe as a member of the black people in America, or the African people, or African American people of this country, that I, whatever happens to me, to free me, it should be noted. Because there's no race of people that have suffered racism any more than my people. We were the first and the worst victims of racism. Yes. So if something has happened in my mind to bring me relief and to give me a sense of freedom in my soul and a sense of freedom from my mind or my intellect, then I say, note should be taken. Yes. And believe me, when I read in the Quran how the Quran treats the tendency to buy racism. And there are many racists who are not racist, who were not racist earlier, but became racist. See, all races that were not born that way in their in the household or in the homes of their mothers and fathers, like clan children of the clan, or like myself in the home of my father and mother. Now, I gave a comparison there that's really not fair, because those white people were also conditioned to want to do physical harm to blacks, to actually want to see blacks exterminated. Some of them want to see blacks exterminated and believe that they, their own hands, should do that job. I was never in any way influenced at home or in the temple while listening to the minister or my father teach to believe that I was to act out my dislike for white folks and go out and do some bodily harm to a white person. I was told to respect them, to even greet them kindly, good day, hello, whatever. I was told if I had a white boss, to give him a fair day's work, not to steal from him, and not to cheat by holding back what I could give him as a laborer or as a worker. So we were not really conditioned to do physical harm or to really be racist in the true sense. We had a racist philosophy, a racist idea, but we were not really racist in the real sense or in the true sense. We would make the follower of the honor of Elijah Muhammad or the supreme wisdom become a racist is when that idea is challenged. And the person has to defend that idea. Then he becomes a racist. His ugliness comes up. His ugliness takes over and overpowers the goodness that the temple of Islam established in him. It takes over, and now he's a mean creature because he has to fight off or defend his belief. So to defend it, he has become wrong, deeper and deeper in his wrong, deeper and deeper in the wrong idea, deeper and deeper in his hatred for whites. So it's intensified when it's threatened. Those who can give it up, who are threatened and say, well, it doesn't make that much sense, maybe I should look at it differently, they're saved. But those who say, no, they just desperately hold on to, the white man is the devil by nature, his mama, his wife, his baby, now and to be born is the devil. You know, he holds on to that. And the black man is God. So he holds on to it. And the more he is addressed by language that tends to threaten that or unravel it or prove it wrong, the more he has to hold on to lies, and the more lies he has to hold on to, the more lies he has to reach out for, then eventually his nature is so warped that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wouldn't want him if he came back and saw him. Yes! But thank God that only happened happens for a few. The great majority of us, we don't fight like that. If we don't know, we just say, well, I'll wait and see. Maybe Allah will show me one day. And if we believe that we should change, we change. The best health that came to me from the Quran. The best help for my social sense of social esteem. The best help for my, you know, I guess all of us maybe who were searching the world of ideas for support or for more understanding, for more light. I guess we looked at communism. Malcolm looked at communism when he was in jail. I looked at communism too. Not with a desire, not with a thought that I was going to choose, but just to know what's there. I was curious. I was looking to see what help, where there's some help. And I read through the idea of the material dialectics and read a lot about the communist idea, and nothing that I read impressed me more than what I read in Quran. The brotherhood of communism to me was not as impressive as the brotherhood of Islam. The brotherhood of Islam to me is just as rich in its science and in its social teachings and in its economic ideas as communism or any other ism that I have come upon on this world. While it is spiritually based, based on taqwa, belief in God, obedience to God, above all things, obey God, above all worship God, above all obedience, obey God, that's what it's based on, but still I found in the language of the Quran, insights, concepts, motivations for my social esteem, more powerful, more richer than anything I found in communism or capitalism or anything else. I could go over a lot of those with you, but that would take a lot of time, more time than I want to take. I'm going straight to the idea of the origin of man in the Quran. And it is the same for the great religions, but the Quran gives it, I think, in a way that respects the need in the rational mind for understanding. God says that you all are children, are descended from one father, Adam, and God said, and he was made from dust. And God says of that Adam, God didn't say, and he was the man of sin, no. God says of that father, see, I shouldn't hold it. I shouldn't wait this. This was for the conclusion. I shouldn't give it. It should be right here, right now. I believe what messes us up in Western society, the idea in Christian West, that we are the children of the first sinner. That ain't a good thing to be thinking about or a good thing to be remembering. I'm the child of the first sinner. My first parent was a sinner. That's a bad way to start out if you want to feel some social esteem. You see?
End of side one. At this time, please fast forward the cassette to the end before you continue on side two.
So, Islam does not tell us that. The Quran, God's word in the Quran, does not tell us that. His word in the Quran, and believe me, the Bible hints something different from what it says. If you study the Bible very carefully, it hints a different idea than that one I just gave you, the idea of original sin. So that idea of original sin is a great mystery, and Christians, if you're in the audience and you're going to stay Christians, believe me, you shouldn't let it bother you anymore. Take it from a Muslim that God has blessed with insights into the Bible. You are not the children of a sinner.
Allah.
And your first father was not a sinner. Your first father was an obedient servant of God. And whatever your first father did, according to our Quran and according to my understanding of the Bible, was done unintentionally. He never intentionally did wrong or went astray. So all of us should have that in our mind, instead of that idea that we are children of a father, a first father, who was a sinner, who brought all of us under sin because of his sin. Now, yes, so the first father in Islam is the father of noble descendants. Noble descendants of the European family, of the African family, of the Asian family, of every family on this earth. All of us are noble descendants of our noble father, Adam. So we believe that nobility is the created gift to man. It's a created gift to man. That God created us for nobility, for honor, for nobility, for social dignity, for social esteem, for great worth, even a bit above the station of angels. But only if we obey God. If we disobey Him, we are told that that same high station that God created you for, you can lose it and fall to the lowest of all the creatures in creation. And again, when I'm told in the Quran that it is God who made your features, says Surah. Pardon me. No. This is different. I'll get to that later. Not features. It is God who made your design, your picture, your design. It is God who made your design or your picture, and He made it beautiful and excellent. And He's talking about every one of us. So I'm sure you can see by now that I'm not saying that there's any support in Islam for racism. There's no support in Islam for any genetic superiority of one race over another. I'm sure that you've come to that conclusion already. So if you're expecting me to give some Quranic support for those ideas, I'm sure you're ready to leave or you're greatly dissatisfied. Now, says God, it is God that made our surah, and He made it beautiful and excellent. Our most beautiful and most excellent. What is this surah? God wants us to see the common picture. That there is the racial picture and there is the human picture. The racial picture is not the big deal with God. The human picture is the big deal with God. So He used this picture in the singular, not in the plural. He said, it is God who made your picture, one picture, and made it most beautiful and excellent. That is your human picture. Now, you know, I'm the kind of unorthodox teacher or preacher. Somebody told me once, say, you don't teach, say, you preach. Say, you don't lecture, you talk. I say, well, they show sit for a long time and listen to my talk. And they do. They do. I have people fought with me who will listen all night to me talk. And they think my talk is more enriching than your lectures. I'm talking about those who criticize me. I'm talking to those who criticize me. Yeah. Now, let me throw a little humor in here. You know, we believe in Islam that the human body, as God created it, is a Muslim. This is not to say that your body is not Christian. We ain't saying that. The body becomes a Christian because of influences. You accept Christianity, now your body is under a Christian. But we believe that the body, as God created it, is a Muslim. And this speaks for the logic in Islam. This is the logic in Islam that says the body is a Muslim. The body is a Muslim. Human body is a Muslim. Now, the human body is a Muslim. Muslim is not a racist. Did you ever see a human body perspire in Russian? You ever hear the human body sneeze in Russian? Cough in Russian? Exude liquid or whatever in Russian? You ever see somebody smile in Russian? I don't know how to detect someone smiling in Russian. A frown in Russian?
Yeah.
No, the human body is one and the same for everybody.
That's right.
And God says there's a sign for you in the differences that are in your tongue, your languages, and your colors. There's a sign for you. So these things are signs. And God says that He made us different to bring us together. Isn't that wonderful? I say bring us together because that is part of the meaning. He made us different so that we would recognize each other, so that we would get acquainted with each other. Now, you know, if we who are one particular race or ethnic group learn of another race or ethnic group that are doing impressive things or has an impressive life, we want to come closer to them. We want to at least study them. We want to know something about them. So our differences do attract us to study each other, become acquainted with each other. But God wants us to know that we shouldn't study each other to get advantages over each other, like the Iblis, the Satan, or the racist. We should study each other so that we will become helpful, mutually benefit. That's why we should study each other. How can we mutually benefit? The West is progressing. America is progressing. They are advocating the cultural interests that we don't be locked out of the world culturally, that we come out of our shell and get acquainted with other cultures, that we accept and respect other cultures so that we can have a better, a more human world. This is really progress for America. I remember a time when you just wore a different dress and you might be hated by people that never saw you before. They wouldn't know whether you were a saint or a devil or angel or what, and wouldn't care. You just didn't conform to their idea of an American. And they would reject you and hate you, didn't even want you around them. I know because my mother was treated that way when they saw her in the public with her head wrapped up and her long dress on. Many times she was treated mean. She was treated very, very, very ugly by American people. In fact, most of the time she would be treated that way when I was a boy. And it took a long time, took decades before we saw change in this society.
Right.
Oh, yes. So in Islam, the help for a man overcoming his racial arrogance is the belief in your own created beauty and excellence. That beauty and excellence is not found in your physical color or in your physical features. That beauty and excellence is found in your qualities and your talents and in your qualities and in your ability. That's internal. Your heart, your soul, your intellect, in its innocence, is the excellence that God sees in all of us. And that excellence can grow in excellence if it keeps its innocence. It can grow in excellence. It can benefit from a bigger world than the world of the racists. If the white man was still under white supremacy, he would have by now been removed from the earth.
Right.
He's not anymore under white supremacy. The big boom for industry with the creation of the modern machines and modern weaponry gave the white man a temporary advantage and superiority over other people. And that would only keep him in position of superior until the people got themselves in a situation where they could challenge that kind of superiority. And we know the Russians came to challenge that kind of superiority. Soon the Red China challenged that superiority. And now there are many nations that are not threatened by that kind of superiority. So the white man cannot have that kind of muscle anymore. So he has to express the humanity that he says was prescribed for him by the founding fathers who wrote the preamble to the Constitution of these United States. In these words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator. Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these rights, liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And it was Dr. King who challenged America, didn't he? To fulfill that promise.
That's right.
And great progress was made, especially with the help from the agitators who said, we don't want to live with you, just give us some states to ourselves. Don't think that civil rights would have had that much attention if that wasn't that gadfly over there, that agitator. Saying, here's a worse alternative. So if you don't want to swallow that pill, then think about this one we got for you. So though we were working apart, working against each other, in a real way, we were actually helping each other. The civil rights movement was helping us, and we were helping the civil rights movement, attacking the arrogant white man from two directions, left and right. One knocking at the door of his claim to humanity, and the other one telling him you ain't got no humanity. Yeah, that's what it was. The Christian movement headed by Dr. King was knocking on the door of his humanity, say, wake up, sleeping humanity. You got big claims, but you're not awake to your own claims. And then standing at the door was Army Elijah Muhammad, a little man standing back there saying, why are you knocking at the door? Ain't nothing there. The man ain't got no humanity. He's a devil. He was created to be a devil, and that's all he can be. The body is a Muslim. The human body is a Muslim. Once the Prophet, peace and blessings be on him, the Prophet stood up for the deceased body. They were taking it to the resting place. And he was sitting, and he stood up when he recognized that the deceased body was passing. And some of his followers asked, say, why you don't stand up for the living body? How come you stand up for a dead body? And his answer was, that body never disobeyed its master. So he didn't put sin on human body. He put sin on the mind in the human body. He said that body never disobeyed its master. And that's what the body was created for. The body was created to serve us. To serve us. If we respect its urgings, it urges us not to do wrong. If we respect its urgings, then it will serve us for the better. But if we ignore its better urgings, it will eventually not try to speak to us. You know? And that's the way nature is, isn't it? That's the way nature is. You know, if you keep ignoring the good nature won't respond. And good deeds erase bad deeds. Isn't that what we taught? Good deeds erase bad deeds. So I'm going to conclude this talk and open for questions. And I conclude it with this. The modern world knows the belief in the genetic superiority of one people over another is ignorance. We're not living in the dark ages of America anymore. We're living in the time of enlightenment and the abundance of scientific facts. So we're not living in the dark ages. So anyone trying to promote the superiority, genetic superiority of one people over another, they're just beating the ground and getting no results. They will get no results. You will only be able to attract a few of the people, and most of the people you attract will be hypocrites.
That's right.
You will live to see them even betray you.
That's right.
The idea just won't stand up anymore. The world is too filled with scientific information.
That's right.
I appreciate men like Franz Boas, who I mentioned, who thought that this racism was a plague, this racist idea was a plague on the beautiful plan or idea that this democracy is to mature for and come into one day. And believe me, I still think we're short of the complete idea of democracy that's in the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. And it is a heavenly idea, a heavenly idea that we always will have to reach up to. But I do believe that we are making great progress, and don't let the condition of another race or the condition of your race break your spirit. We African Americans, we blacks, we should not let the condition of our race break our spirit. We shouldn't feel ourselves not achieved because our race is a failure. In Islam, you don't take on the burden of anybody. Every tub has to sit on its own bottom. Huh? Yes. In Islam, you don't take on the burden of other people and let it break your spirit. You take on the burden of other people to change them. But you don't take on that burden if it's hurting your spirit or breaking your spirit. In other words, you don't make yourself guilty with them.
That's right.
No. You're not guilty of being a failure if they're a failure. If your race is a failure and you are an achiever, then have uplift spirit.
Yes, sir.
Keep your pride and your dignity in your own achievements. And try to educate them, try to have some time to address their problem, but never let the failure of your lot crush your spirit when you know yourself that you are an achiever.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Peace be on you. As-salamu alaykum.
Get some questions and answers for about 10 minutes. So I would ask that you come to this mic if you have a question. And I mean, don't wait to 2 minutes before the last person, because we're going to be moving with these questions. And I would say to you, we don't need a short story at this time. Time is short. We just need answers to questions direct. And then ma'am will answer the question. And we can go on from there.
Okay. My question is, what are you going to do with all the time that I use, and how long do you think we will be putting in here?
Please repeat it, because I'm not hearing clearly.
What are you going to do with the permanent action, and how long do you think before
we
wiped out here in America?
Oh, okay. I got the question. Affirmative action. Yes. Affirmative action, as we all know, is in a lot of trouble and has been in trouble for some years now. You know, I think, it's a big question. Let me put it this way. I think it's time for African Americans to question our loyalty to the Democratic Party. And study both parties and take the good from both according to the dictates of our own intelligence, and needs. Take the good from both and not depend so heavily on government for answers in our life. I know I sound like a Republican to you, but I'm not registered as a Republican or as a Democrat, but I do vote. And I would say also that relief won't be good for us. We are people who began as a strong people. Frederick Douglass was a strong man. Harriet Tubman, a strong woman. And all the others that I could name, they were strong people. We all know that. But they didn't begin with a lot of help, did they? What made them strong was being denied. So I don't say we should have an unfair law. No, if there's an unfair law, we should seek to change it. But we shouldn't be looking for too much help from the federal government. The strongest people on this earth are not people that's helped a whole lot by government. They are people that do a whole lot and make it possible for strong governments to come into existence. So I would like to see us not ask for too much from the government, but ask a whole lot of ourselves. That's what I'd like to see. Encyclopedia, the best lexicon, whatever, is the Quran itself. Now, if the believer, the new believer, the new convert, we say convert, or the one who accepts Islam just today, right now, if they are blessed to have imam, leader, or teachers, or educational materials, literature, that come from the pen of someone or from or some persons who have that complete picture, a complete definition of Allah, there'll be no problem. But if the leader or the teachers themselves don't see the full meaning of Allah in the text of the Quran, there's a problem. And believe me, the problem didn't just start on the shores of America. There are sections of the Muslim world, Ismailis and some others, who have ideas of Allah that are more foreign to the Quran than they are to some other people's religions or people's holy books. You'll find a likeness of their idea of God in some other scripture and not in the Quran. And there is I would say, a danger for African Americans coming from Trinitarian idea of God and coming from, especially coming from the temple of Islam or Nation of Islam idea of God, to accept the religion, say, yes, I accept, but they still have some influence. Some influences from that teaching that they had in the temple of Islam and the church is influencing their idea of Allah. There is a danger. So really, when we ask someone to make shahada, we should let them know that they are witnessing that God is the creator of the heavens and the earth, and there is no son, no descendants from him. Man descended from man, not from God. See, this is contrary to the idea in some religions. Some religions believe man descended from God. Man descended from man, not from God. We should make that very plain. And that God is the creator of everything, and that God is bigger than you, bigger than your city, bigger than the earth, bigger than the sky. God is bigger than everything. Now, if I can tell this to my 2-year-old child, to my 8-year-old daughter, and they have no problem with it, they seem relieved and grow up healthy, how come we can't tell it to grown-ups? I thank Allah. Every one of our children, they have no problem. They're not into no crazy, weird spiritual bags. Not a one that have grown up in our house have gone spiritually crazy. And it's because we tell them just plainly. And God is not to be seen with these physical eyes. We have to tell them that. Because in this society, in this Western environment, we think you can see God with the physical eye. That God is the black man, or God is the white man. We have to tell them, you cannot see God with the physical eye. But you can see God. And everyone should want to see God one day. If you haven't seen God, you should want to see God. But you see God with your soul. That's the way you see God, with your soul. And you see God in his effect on his creation. God has created his effect on his creation. His effect explains the beauty and the logic of the whole material scheme. One designer with one purpose. Who needed this world for himself? Not. He did not need this world for himself. This is the idea of Christian love, huh? The love that Christians understand. The divine love. He didn't create this world because he needed it. And this is the idea of mercy, divine mercy. In Islam, we don't call it divine love, we call it divine mercy, Allah's mercy. He created this world so that man would come to know himself. See, he created us not knowing our own selves. And come to know his creator. And come to utilize all of the great treasures that God has put into this great scheme we call the universe. He created us to utilize it all for the benefit of mankind. This is the God in Islam. Thank you. Next. Wa alaikum as-salam. Yes. Thing dies, especially a thing with a strong lid, a strong will, a creature with a strong will, but it dies, It can't get up on its feet again. It will never stand on its feet again. But it holds on to life, though it's down. And when anything comes and threaten it, it tempts to try to get itself up on its feet again. That's how these groups are. They're a thing that's been dealt the death blow. And the little movement we see in them just throes of death. Just expressions of the dead, that's all. They can't get anywhere. I tell my brothers when we meet, my African-American colleagues, the leaders of this community, I tell them when we meet, don't worry about Klan, don't worry about Flintheads, Skinheads, and none of these other Nazi groups, don't worry about any of them. The government can't handle them. If I can get me a bullhorn or get on the wire, believe me, we'll take care of them in one day. They're not any great threat anymore. Don't worry about it. But don't ignore them. Got to watch them. And we watch. We're watching. And we got some very good watchers, too. That's true. Favor blacks. So you can change the law. The law can change. But still the patterns, so they speak of built-in or institutional racism, you know. So the patterns still stay there. But to me, this is nothing for alarm. That doesn't alarm me at all. Accept that challenge. So their whites going to benefit from whites being established in the position of authority and power. Their whites going to benefit. And we are at a disadvantage, no doubt. But aren't other people who come here too at a disadvantage? And going away from here is not the answer to me, where we will be black all together in one situation and won't have that disadvantage, because they will still have advantage though a distance away.
Right.
And an advantage a distance away, as a boxer, I never boxed professionally, but I know the art. I know an advantage of a tall man, a little bit of long reach, distant from me, is more dangerous for me than his advantage up close. The closer I get to him, the less his advantage is over me.
That's right.
I get right in his chest, I might have the advantage. And that's just what I want to do in America. I want to get in the chest of this superior white man and compete with him. I want to get right in his chest and compete vigorously with him.
The last one will be the last question, but like I said, I'm sure we can.
Yes, all right, thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam.
One question is, why is the forum in the media working
out of
all the cities?
What's that?
The forum in the media working out of all the cities about certain societies, about the nation, about certain
60s in the government or the world trying to take the white working people in America to the world.
Yeah.
I feel like the rest of the argument of the people being a Muslim, what kind of damage should we take in combat in that situation?
Yeah. First of all, I thank Allah that it wasn't people who identify as Muslims. That's the first. Because if it had been, it would just open up so many problems and put so many Muslims' life in danger, and jeopardy and danger. So we thank Allah that it wasn't any of our Muslim brothers who did such things. Now, first thing, if we are really to be counted in those who have that surah that I mentioned, that human picture that Allah created for everybody, if we are really that human being as Muslims, then when we heard of that tragedy and saw the victims of the explosion, of the explosives, dead, maimed, bleeding, it should touch our hearts very deeply. And we are American. We are American citizens. We are not a rich community. But I already pledged $1,000 to the victims there of our money as a gesture. We don't have it, but we should. The poor man should do something. Even the poor man should do something. So we're doing it as a gesture. And I think if Muslims here in this country, native-born, nationalized citizens, and Muslims abroad, if they would take this tragedy as an opportunity to put Muslims on record for expressing their human excellence, reaching out with the hand of humanity to the victims of those who are brutal and have no humanity, I think it would do a lot to remove from the air a lot of the ugliness that the world, the Western world, associates with us. So I think this is the time for us to act from our hearts, to act upon our humanity, or from our humanity, but also to act upon our wisdom. And it would be wise for us to make a gesture to those people, to those victims, and be on record among those who extending to them the hand of sympathy and help.
Yes,
sir. I thought he said that was the last one, but you're talking, so go on. Go on.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to, on behalf of the National Black Youth Corps, I would like to thank you for taking the time to come here to deliver a little bit of your powerful message to us. I'm constantly asking you two questions. They ask me all the time. Who do you love among the three Islamic people? Who are you good among the three Islamic people? I love you all, and I love you. I love you so far, and I also love you so far. And I'm good for you.
Thank you. Let me let you in on a little secret. I'm running from the old teachings, the old supreme wisdom. I'm running from it. And I'm running from all those who identify with it. But I'm not running so fast that I lose sight of them. I don't want to get so far ahead of them that I can't see them back there. I think you understand what I'm saying. I'm not hearing it very well from there. The question was, what should we do to stabilize our families, our mosques and churches,
and our
families? Yes. What is needed most? Yes, that's the problem too. We don't have stable homes. We don't have stable families. The picture of the race
doesn't say that we have stable homes or stable families. We know some of us do, but that's not the picture for the race. And we don't have stable communities. That's true. And what I think is needed most is what we had before the, I would say, the kind of termination of the freedom movement. What we had from Frederick Douglass and maybe even before him to Dr. Martin Luther King was African-American leadership that we respected because of their character, that their better character, and because and we respected because of their better mind. And that's what we need to do. We need to bring back respect for leadership based upon character and the maturity of the intellect, not just knowledge. A lot of wise people are very criminal, abusive, etc. Educated people can be criminal, educated people can be abusive, educated people can be oppressors, and we shouldn't support that kind of leadership. We should support the best human leadership and look for those who have best learned and best experienced and have the best character, and all of us should work to lift up an intelligentsia of African Americans. That's what we should do. And let them detect things, detect problems coming, help us address those problems, and help us work out a better life for ourselves on this earth. Don't let anybody tell you that people don't need leadership. If people as far behind as we are, even today, we need great leadership. But we don't need leaders who will just mash emotional buttons and get responses from us, for us to follow and support them. No, we need people who respect our intelligence and come straight through the door of our intelligence and not be mashing emotional buttons to get us to respond to them so they can empty our pockets or set us up for self-destruction. Thank you.
For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman for human salvation.
You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role.
You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role. You mighty people and play your role.
Bring it down now. You know that we got a job to do. I'm talking to you and you and you. Every man, a woman, boy and girl. We got the job to remake the world. So get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
So get up,
you mighty,
come on and get
play
up, come on. Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
To remake the world, we got to start with this land. Our country is sinking in the sand. The president is just one man. He can't solve everything, but united we can. Or you people can lend a hand. An example of our great demand. Come on, be a great woman, be a strong man. Show the American how to be American. And get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty,
come on and get up,
play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Because we should get the children involved, and then they would not grow to be tough, grow to be hood. If you want to do some good,
get up,
you mighty people, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and get up, play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Get up,
you mighty people, and play your role.
Yeah, now the most important part must be dealt to ten. To your countries, help to add to your communities, well, to give your children some help. I got, you got, he got, she got, we got to listen. to what I tell you, to put the world in the right state of health. Remake the world by remaking yourself and get up.
United people and play your role.
Get up,
United,
come on, get up,
get up. United people and play your role.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.